All right, thank you for coming. This is panel is called Online Adulation, Use, Don't Abuse Your Audience. Just before we start, how many of you do your own podcasts or blogs? Good. That's the audience we need to be discussing this with today. How many of you do your own content of any sort at all? Almost everybody raised their hand. So, and how many of you have a community developing around that content that you're wishing to engage in? Okay, excellent. So everybody who didn't raise your hand at all, you might be a little bored, but everybody else should be good. This panel is about the audience, not just using it to market for you. I think there's been a lot of panels about that, but also getting along with the audience, developing a relationship with the people who like what you do in a way that doesn't exploit them, but helps you out, helps them out, and how to deal with the audience as it grows. Because in my experience, it's a lot friendlier at the beginning than it is later on. So we've got several distinguished panelists with different kinds of audiences to help us hash some of this stuff out. Go ahead and introduce yourself. We'll start with Casey.
I'm Casey McKinnon. I started a video blog with my boyfriend 2.5 years ago called KitCast, and we later launched GalactCast, a sci-fi comedy show, and then A Comic Book Orange, a comic book review show. So our audience is, people watching videos on via iTunes, YouTube, and pretty much every video host possible.
Go ahead, Heather.
Okay. My name is Heather Armstrong, and I started a website in 2001 called juice.com, and a year later was fired for it. And that instance in my life created, that was where my popularity began. And from there, it evolved into more of a chronicle of living life as a recovering Mormon in Utah and raising a child. And I think the majority of my audience, while I think initially it was single women in their early 20s, I think it's more now probably women with children trying to figure it out as well.
I'm Chris Smith from Zanzibar 19, and we do ridiculous, stupid comedy videos on the web, essentially. We kind of are hoping to become professional fools online. And we did a show called Snowman Hunters that started in 2006. In 2007, we were nominated for a YouTube award, and we were very happy to be killed by the ninja because he basically took our category, and we actually advocated for him. And then our audience is kind of what you would expect. A lot of the young men in society that are causing a lot of problems, there's a lot of crossover with that and our viewership, not surprisingly. I think the most interesting thing that's happened to us so far in and around that is one of our fans claims to have been arrested emulating us. So we had to put up a video saying, no, we're serious. When we tell you not to do what we do in these videos, we really mean it, because we haven't heard from him since. We expect that he contacted us between being arrested, getting out on bail, and then getting sentenced. We haven't heard from him since. But other than that, we have a lot of nice fans.
I'll put GalactiCast up since wasn't outputting when you were talking. That way people get a chance to look at it. My name's Tom Merritt. I'm executive editor at CNET.com, and I do a podcast called Buzz Out Loud, amongst other things. This is the thing we do that probably has the largest audience. It's a really fun audience, very smart people who love to do things. One of the most recent things, we started using Yahoo Live and Ustream to live cast while we're recording the podcast, and a couple people within a day had created a embedded IRC chat room and embedded the three streams from all of us and put it up at a domain name that they registered called watchbol.com. So I feel really lucky to have an audience that's that dedicated to just, throw stuff up for you to do. But it also means that you have a responsibility to, at some point we would like to do this ourselves on CNET. And when we do, how do we bring that in so that it doesn't it shows appreciation for what these folks did? So that's kind of what we want to talk about today, is how do you get your audience involved in the content, and how do you set boundaries between yourself and them? Let's start with the promotion, though. You guys have some unique examples of ways the audience is promoted. Casey, I know you guys did something with the credits. It was pretty unique.
We We wanted to get our audience involved after about a year of making GalacticCast. And part of that was, you know, we weren't making any money at all. And we wanted, rather than putting advertisements on the show, we decided a clever idea. I call it clever, but that's kind of vain. was that we would have people buy sponsor credits. They'd sponsor the show. And if they donated $5, they got Best Boy credit. And it would go up to, you know, cinematographer and whatever, up until producer, which was $500. And we actually did get a bunch of producers, which was really cool. And if you actually see the front page here and scroll down here, these are regular credits because we actually were not doing it these days. But in the older episodes, you could see also sponsor credits, and there was tons of names under different titles. So that was one way. One thing that was really cool was actually we decided that along with our fans, we would set up a charity sponsorship for Child's Play, which is a great charity made by the guys from Penny Arcade, if you guys know those guys. and it gives video games to children in children's hospitals. So we raised a couple of $1,000 with the audience and gave that to Child's Play.
So you have any problems with people when they, you know, were giving you money or wanted more involvement than just having
well,
their name up?
Well, it was kind of, I think we may have turned down someone who had a porn site because basically for the sponsor credits, if it was under $100, you don't get a link. You get your name and you get the name in the video as well as on the site. But if you donate $100, to $500, you do get a link back to your site, to a site of your choice. But of course, we moderated it just to make sure that there was, you know, no porn sites. And we did have someone who wanted to donate $100 and have a link to his porn sites. So we turned that guy down.
How do you make that call? Like, you know, is it just because it doesn't go along with your audience?
He was a nice guy. So it was easy to turn him down and just explain. And, you know, I mean, people on porn sites understand because, you know, they're not that stupid.
I'm sure they deal with it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about y'all? Do you have some examples of promotion, Chris? Since Heather's looking at you.
Yeah, I guess so. one of the things that we haven't done anything nearly as smart as that.
I'm glad I'm not vain.
No, that was
someone
really good.
Agrees
In fact,
me.
I'm telling you right now, I'm going to steal everything you just said. what we've done is our show. One of the reasons we started Snowman Hunters was to essentially kind of try out some things that we had been frustrated as comedy screenwriters and just tried out different things. And we noticed that while we built up a really kind of loyal fan base to a certain level, the fact that we just had a series of something that you would have to watch from week to week that tied into each other made it difficult for people to jump on later, which as aspiring TV writers we probably should have thought about because we had watched that happen with regular TV shows. So what we have done is taken our own stuff and kind of chopped it up into what we call confetti previews. And we just, you know, for every episode, there are like 5 or 10 jokes that we really like or whatever. We take them up, dice them up, and throw them out there and just basically say, take this and show your friends. And it's a nice way to get our fans to kind of tease their friends by saying, hey, look at this. Most of the reactions from what we've done when you finish watching one of these little confetti previews is, what the hell did I just see? And it's supposed to tickle you to go. And it's fun for our fans to kind of give it to their friends and tweak them with it and then hopefully motivate them to come to our site. It's worked out pretty well so far. Our traffic has gone up noticeably because of it. But I think I'm going to steal what you just said.
Well, I think the growth of my traffic is completely different in the sense that I've been going for about 7 years. And initially when I got fired from my website, it was the press that I got on Metafilter and some other community sites that sent people my way. But since then, it's been completely organic in the sense most people find out about my website because their sister or their mother or their brother sent them there. And what I've tried to do on my about page is lay out, okay, this is what you're going to be reading. You get on my about page in the first 2 or 3 sentences. This is my sense of humor. This is what I talk about. And you're either going to love me or hate me. And if you like the about page, then I think you're going to continue reading. But almost most of my readers have come because they've heard about me from somebody else.
I think one of the best ways, just keeping it low concept, is just responding to people. Like if somebody asks a question or has an issue, giving them an email back sometimes just blows them away, even if it's not a highly trafficked site, just the fact that you paid attention. But at a certain point, there's more than you can respond to, right. Which I know you probably, you know, you run into.
I run into that a lot. And for a couple years, I used to beat myself up about it because, I mean, I want to receive an email back from someone. And my husband's going to get so mad at me for this. He wants me, and I probably should do this, and I'm sure there are many reasons I should do this, is have an autoresponder that says, thank you so much for your email. But the volume and the amount that I get prohibits me from being able to give you a personal response. But I wouldn't want to receive that from someone. Mm-hmm. What I try to do is when I do answer, it's a very small answer, but it's basically all that I can give. And I've had to sort of come to a point where I am okay with myself for doing that. And people are still grateful for just the thank you so much, and I really appreciate you reading.
It's pretty hard too for you because you probably have a lot of really personal emails.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I mean, I explicitly say, look, I read every single email. I consider that part of my job. I read every single comment and know that I completely appreciate it. I just physically am incapable of responding to everything.
It's almost impossible sometimes to read every single email, especially when people write volumes and volumes.
But I do it.
And yet, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any special tactics for getting through them? Do you break it up and assign it to
yourself? I check my email about every hour just to keep up with it.
Mann would be so disappointed.
For other reasons as well. But yeah, I check it. If I don't check it every hour and I don't check it every other hour, then it's a day, you know, days of catching up. So
what about you, Casey? I mean, you keep up with your audience in a lot of different ways, like Twitter and Facebook. And
yeah. Well, you know, it's actually easy for me because to answer emails, you know, they're all geeks like me and it's pretty easy to answer. They're, you know, mostly fanboys. I'm a fangirl. So, you know, just a short answer, usually references to Logan's Run or Star Wars or something.
You just respond, there is no sanctuary, to every single thing.
Yeah, exactly. Sterling Green is people. And that's cool. You know, it's pretty easy to respond. And yeah, I'm on a billion social networks. You know, name it, I'm on it. But I do get some really weird people sometimes who get personally upset that I don't follow them on Twitter, and I just can't follow everyone on Twitter.
And you moved over on Facebook to a fan page, right?
I have a personal page and a fan page, and I'm still kind of struggling with the idea of, do I ignore people if they try to add me on Facebook and I don't know them? Because it's a really tough call. A lot of the times I'm friends with or the person sending the request is usually friends with Robert Scoble and like Kevin Rose or Jason Calacanis or something. And so you kind of sit for a second and go, do I know that person? But they're friends with the kind of people that they've probably never met. They just idolize or something. And so it's always a tough call. I'm still accepting everyone, so.
You're accepting on both accounts?
Well, on the fan page, it's automatic.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But on the personal page, I only ignore people that are creepy. So I give them a little bit of a background test.
How do you tell? I mean, that's an important litmus test.
If they have a practically nude picture of themselves, or if their favorite things to do is porn or something. I mean, you can tell. You can tell. So
that's why you're not my friend.
And then, well, actually,
I wasn't gonna say it, Chris. I'm glad you owned up.
And the other thing too is that often, you know, you'll add someone and then they'll immediately send you an invite to a billion applications, and that's when you just go remove.
I've removed people for that, and I had one person contact me, and I just was honest. I was like, man, you were just like including me in every invitation. It got too much. I had to. You know, don't mean anything personal about it.
It's only when I know that someone is a devoted fan. You know, I have a couple of guys that just are, they always comment on my wall, and they're really sweet, and they're just really wonderful people. And if they send me invites, then I'll send them a warning and say, you know, I love you, but please don't send me any application invites.
Do you do the Twitter or the Facebook?
No, I do. We have a Facebook account. When we opened up, we got accounts on everything. And actually, this is one thing I wanted to ask you guys is it's hard to pay attention to all of the different accounts across all of them. And I've kind of, I guess it's difficult to manage them, I guess, because they're, you know, like we'll pay attention to our site, we'll pay attention to YouTube, we'll pay attention to a couple sites, but, you know, like our Friendster account, no offense if there's anyone here, I haven't seen in, you know, 6 months or whatever. A lot of the mail that we get is kind of like, hey, we just made a flamethrower out of this Super Soaker. Look at this. I guess we're a lot easier. We have a lot of bit easier time because we essentially everybody that comes to us knows that we're kind of fools, and we don't get people pouring their hearts out to us. We don't get, you know, some of the other creepier stuff. We just get, you know.
You need boobs for that.
I know. I can't tell. Well,
you gotta
practically
eat more, dude.
I knew
you know, compared to most guys, I might have no. Yeah, so that's I've resigned myself to the fact.
I'm on Twitter, but I only follow the people who I know in real life. And I've had a couple really insane people. Every time you add somebody as a friend on Twitter or you're following them on Twitter, it sends you an email that says so and so is following you on Twitter. And a couple people have really wanted me to add them back. So what they'll do is they'll add me and then subtract me, and then they'll add me again, so that it'll keep sending me emails as if I don't notice the first time they sent it to me.
Yeah, I took off those notifications.
I turned off that notification too.
Why haven't you taught me? But it's kind of funny because like it continues to happen like day after day after day. It's like there's another one. I'm not going to add you.
So and. That's one thing. It's benign. You can turn off, you can delete their that notification. You can turn off the notifications. But what do you do with the people who are actively pestering you with emails and requests and
just
letters?
Stop responding.
And what if they don't stop?
That's it. I deal with that a lot.
Yeah.
And my official policy is to completely ignore. But sometimes that doesn't work because they do not get the clue, and they actually were trying to inject themselves into my real life. Mm-hmm. And I have my really good friend who writes the etiquette books and who I did the panel with yesterday. She basically wrote me an email that I sent to these people, and I say, you are making me uncomfortable, and I would like you to stop contacting me, and I don't want you inside of my life anymore. Please don't take this the wrong way.
Or please take it exactly the way.
My lawyers will be contacting you shortly. Thanks.
Well, and that brings up a good point because a lot of times if we get angry emails at Buzz Out Loud, I'll respond to them and try to have a pretty reasoned response to say like, you know, I'm sorry that you feel that we're all full of shit. In what way, you know, if they're vague, I'm like, what is it you don't like? You know, give us some feedback. It's helpful. And 98% of the time, they write back and say, like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was just having a bad day. You know, I didn't know you were a real person. I didn't think you'd read this. I didn't think you'd respond. And all of a sudden, you've, like, saved that person from not listening to your show. And you've actually turned them into more of a fan in some ways.
Exactly.
But that works for my show. I don't know if that works for every show.
Well, there's another thing. There's another factor, too, is children. Like actually if you look at my YouTube account, there is a kid who's left comments throughout the whole entire profile, and I don't know what to tell him, you know, please stop being creepy and stalker-like. I don't know if I should talk to his parents. I don't want to embarrass him. He's only 11 or 12 years old. So, that's another thing.
What do you do?
I've been ignoring
him
but he sends me messages on Facebook and YouTube, and he leaves me comments on my wall and on YouTube. And
are you here?
You know. No, he's not. Okay.
Is that you?
Might watch the podcast.
No, that one was not me.
Uh-oh.
Please stop.
Yeah, please stop. I love you, but you know, you're creepy.
Well, and we had a guy who was, I can't remember now, what the question was, but he just kept emailing a question. Or it might have even not even been a question. It may have just been a correction to something we said, because that's one of our fans' pastimes, is to find errors in our podcast and tell us about them. And he would not stop emailing. It was over and over and over and over. And then we were in this Watch BOL chat room that I had up earlier, and he was in there, and he was saying the exact same thing. And finally, Jason, our podcast producer for the show, said, okay, man, I hear you. He's like, okay, good. I just wanted to make sure. And then he stopped. So I think at some, you know, ignoring works for some times, but I think at some points you have to actually respond and say, stop. Or you have to respond and say, you know, this is bothering us. You know, can you, you know, we'll answer the question.
I'm afraid of what he's going to grow up into, you know, and, right? And I should probably tell him, but it's a tough call.
Yeah,
I wish his mom could tell him.
People. You have to confront people in a way that isn't combative. Mm-hmm. And that's tricky. Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I've constantly been surprised. I mean, one of the processes that we've gone through at Zanzibar 19 is essentially unlearning everything that Hollywood taught us when we were trying to crack that nut. I mean, be quiet, be careful, be this, be that. And it's just, when we first started, we were kind of aggressive in getting our name out there a little bit and a little too much. So we would have people write in and say, will you guys just shut up and this and that? And, you know, and we'd write back, hey, we're sorry and everything. And exactly what you said, we would have people that hated our guts, sometimes deservedly so, become our biggest advocates and become our biggest fans. And for me, I'm constantly having to remind myself, and I think, I mean, this is one of the things that I would like to say, is it is sometimes as simple as just talking to them and apologizing. And, you know, usually it takes a really cold, hard, mean person to still be mean to you after you've apologized to them. You know, and maybe that's one of the things you can use to weed out the crazies from the not crazies, because if they're still going at you, they're probably crazy.
Heather, you're smiling.
I write, you know, really explicitly and extensively about mental health issues. And so a large portion of my readership is crazy. And good crazy, but then there is a large portion that is bad crazy. And engaging them on any level is just a bad idea. Because any sort of overture towards, and it's not many, but you get a feeling, like a gut feeling, in the certain way they phrase things or the certain way they're trying to actually inject themselves into your real life, that if you engage with this person on any level, all it is going to do is encourage them. And so it's just this wall of completely ignoring them.
So how do you deal when you've got that percentage of your audience that you have to deal with that way? How do you deal with the people who aren't that way, who really just want to connect, you know, trustfully and legitimately?
Well, like, here I set up a meetup.
I just made up a word, by the way. I'm sorry.
You
trustfully. I don't know.
That's a good word.
Truthiness.
Yeah. Well, I open my comment section a lot because most of my readers are sane and speak in complete sentences. And I had a meetup 2 days ago and met with many readers who, you know, I do my best to reach out to those who I know are reading me for a reason, just like I would in normal life. You know, I treat them like they would be in the same room with me.
So you do meetups regularly?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start doing them regularly, I think.
Uh-huh. How'd it go?
It went amazing. It was absolutely amazing. Like, very, very touching. I'm flattered. It was amazing.
And you didn't have any of the uncomfortable folks show up, or
well,
at least they hid?
No. The legal team wants me to say it was completely fine.
Gotcha. What other ways do you think people can engage the community in a good way with the content? Either stuff you've done or ideas, you know, that you've seen other people do.
For me, I've been touched by how our my community kind of looks after me sometimes. And sometimes I don't want to say I engage them by not engaging them, but we made, in September last year, we made a video about Osama bin Laden. So we're going to do, you know, this Osama bin Laden thing. And then we figured, hey, you know, that went over well. We, you know, ruffled some feathers, and why don't we do one on Anonymous? We're going to make fun of Anonymous. Well, apparently they have a lot more time on the internet than Al-Qaeda. So they started you know, so we posted the video and all of our fans liked it. And then we'd see posts from like a non-254, you know, buy a dog, get some curtains and this kind of stuff. And we thought, oh, crap. And then pretty soon our fans started to talk to the Anon fans that had senses of humor, essentially, and talked them out of coming after us. So we, you know, in a sense, you know, sometimes my instinct is to just jump in and start talking to people and this and that and start, you know, fighting them off. But, you know, I think I was busy that day or something for some reason. And by the time I came back, our bacon had essentially been saved by our fans. And then it was just a process of going to the people that stuck up for us and said, thank you very much. We really appreciate this. And, you know, now the site can continue because, you know, apparently they're going to try to take somebody else down now.
Well, that can happen a lot where your fans will be your best defense if you just wait a beat. That'd be one thing that I would advise too, is if something especially gets your goat or you're upset or, you know, you want to react right away, is wait a day. It's not going to hurt. And you'll calm down. You'll probably write a more composed response and you might not have the problem anymore. Because that happens in our forums a lot where, you know, the hardcore fans will kind of jump to your defense and say everything, you know, that needs to be said.
Yeah.
And you can just post, yeah.
Exactly. Unfortunately, I don't really have any patience. So usually I am the first guy in there. But yeah, I agree.
I have a different experience on Galacticast. You know, we do parody. And at one point, if you all remember the HD DVD key being released on the internet and, you know, it was kind of shutting down Dig for a bit and everyone was posting, you know, creative works as well as just, well, creative works with the numbers as well as just the numbers in general. We got this great idea for a parody of Lost called Found. And rather than having the numbers from Lost, we actually had the HD DVD numbers. And one of our fans said that he was a lawyer, and he absolutely agreed that our work is parody and that we shouldn't worry about the consequences if we did put those numbers up in our video. So he said, if you put this up, I will legally represent you, and I'll make sure that I'll do it for free. And so we did it, and you know, it did really well. It was one of our big videos. So, oh, there it is. Yeah, and actually we actually say the HD DVD key numbers
over
a billion times, a billion times. I still know the numbers. So.
Heather, you got some?
Sort of a similar experience. I was sued by a publishing company for not signing a contract. It's a long story. And was advised by the lawyers that had been hired or were recommended to us by my agent to not talk about it on my website. And this was a 4-month, you know, it was like the worst 4 months of our lives because we were afraid we were going to lose the house and trying to pay legal bills and whatnot. And when we finally signed the settlement to end the lawsuit, I went and wrote about it on my website, and I had hundreds of emails from lawyers saying, "I wish you would have said something because I would have done it for free." And it was one of the biggest lessons I ever learned. Wow. And we just shake our heads every time we think about it.
Well, it's a good question, which is, how much of your real life do you want to reveal in, you know, in video or audio or on a blog? I mean, the more little details I've found, the more people will bond with you. I was talking to some folks earlier today about South Park and how people in Denver find it much funnier because they use all of these inside references, but people outside of Denver don't have a problem with it because, you know, they're still funny. And so I think that's one interesting tactic, is to drop these little things about, like, you know, Greenville, Illinois, or, you know, Jason on our show will do Idaho. But then how much of it is too much? How much of it is too inside baseball, and how much of it is too revealing?
Actually, I've had the experience that even though I don't really hold back on the internet, people still don't know me I mean, no one will ever know you if you put stuff up on the internet. It doesn't really matter what you say. I find that, you know, I go to conferences and I'm promotional Casey, you know? That's what you do when you're at conferences. And when you're online, well, I'm also promotional Casey most of the time, you know? And so everyone is always seeing this promotional persona, and that's not who I am when I'm, you know, off the internet and away from conferences.
I think I'm completely different.
Yeah.
Only in the sense that, I mean, I write exactly like I talk, and I have a lot of people who meet me and say, "You're exactly like I thought you were going to be," almost disappointed. Yeah, this is who I am. And people are surprised to find out that I actually do have boundaries and that there are things that I don't write about. But I don't try to make it seem. I think it's part of who I am that makes it seem that I will tell you anything and you can tell me anything. So that's how I live my blog.
I'd like to say that being a fool on the internet is some sort of elaborate persona. But
you really do shoot snowmen?
Well, you gotta kill them somehow. A lot of times, I mean, I do quote-unquote play characters when we do it, but I guess maybe that's it. I don't really share a lot because what I'm doing isn't necessarily about sharing and kind of opening myself up and everything. I'm sure there are a couple psychologists that could have free reign of our videos and figure out a lot of stuff I don't want people to know, but hopefully they're busy doing other things. I don't know. I guess it's just, I just try to be honest and treat, and I know that everybody does that, and maybe I'm just still learning the basic lessons that a lot of people are learning. But yeah, just I just kind of be honest and answer questions straightforwardly, and I haven't had any problems up until this point doing that, and maybe I'm just lucky, or I don't know.
I think the thing to remember is that we as humans make judgments on data, and depending on what data you put up there about yourself, people are going to make an assumption and come to a judgment about who you are. So, you know, think about that when you put up information. Think about what your privacy.
Picture too.
Yeah, it will always be wrong. Yeah, but think about, you know, what you're putting up there, and you know, you might be the, like, my mother doesn't want to put up much, you know, about herself because that's the way she is. She's a private person. So if you're a private person, well, figure out where your boundaries are, and it's good to, I think it's good to get a show people a broad aspect about yourself, you know, if all the things you like instead of just one thing. I know that you know, a lot of people just think I'm a sci-fi geek, but you know, I love lots of other things too. So yeah,
I know I have a constant conversation with myself. Just for the sake of my own sanity and the sake of my family's sanity, is when I sit down to write something, I sort of go, I go through my mind and I'm like, okay, I've been living with this audience long enough to know that there's going to be this type of reaction, and this type of reaction. And am I in an emotional place where I can handle all of that? And a recent example, last year I was diagnosed with a small skin cancer, which is nothing like ovarian cancer or a brain tumor or anything, but it still scared the living shit out of me. And I remember thinking, I'm going to write about this, and people are totally going to say that I am wringing the drama out of this tiny little piece of skin cancer. So I wrote about it and tried to make it as funny as I possibly could make skin cancer. And of course people were just like, I can't believe she's making fun of cancer. And I was like, I was anticipating your response. And I was, but the best part about me making the decision to talk about it, one, is because I don't know how to talk about anything else except what's going on. But the flood of email of people saying, because you showed that picture of what was on your arm, I went and got something checked out. And someone actually went to the dermatologist a week after I posted the picture of the skin cancer, and they found melanoma on her back and caught it early enough that it wasn't a problem. So I always go back to that example of, you know, I know I expect the worst, but so much of the best can happen.
It's a rule of unintended consequences. Wow. Like you just can't plan for how people are going to use or react. I kind of take the idea of put as many things out in there for people to use and react to as possible, and don't hold back unless it's like legally a bad idea or dangerous, you know, like giving out your home address and what dates you're going to be at South by Southwest and how big your dog is and how scary and how there it will be. No.
But oh, you know, and always, I mean, always Twitter where you're going after you're there so that they don't create a big line at parties. Yeah.
Yeah, that's handy, South by Southwest.
Yeah, man, I didn't get into 16-bit.
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't here yet either. But you had to climb the fence?
Apparently.
We've got some more topics to talk about, but since this is about listening to the audience, does anybody have any questions that they want? Go on over to the microphone over there, because this is being recorded for podcast, so we want to be able to hear your question.
Okay, hi guys. Tim Ferriss, just a quick question. So there are all these social networks, a million and one ways to keep in touch with your fans and so forth and so on. I'm sure there'll be another billion in 2008. I'm wondering if you had to choose one, let's say one tool outside of your blog or one social networking site, which you would choose and why, and then how much you think it would impact your community on your blog if you were to just stop all of it altogether.
If you were to stop what? Stop
Facebook, stop all MySpace, the whatever yeah. it might happen to be.
Well, I guess I'm the social network whore here, so I'll go. I would choose Pounce. Because I've had the best social interaction with people on that website. I can post my videos and people can instantly comment on them. I can post links to my blog. I can post, you know, so much stuff. And it's just really helpful. I get, you know, tons of comments. And in comparison to Twitter, where, you know, you Twitter something, people don't always respond. And if they do, you have to at respond to them. And it gets kind of messy. And I don't think followers really want to follow, you know, at someone. So Pounce, I think definitely my favorite social network.
Just a quick follow-up. Since you mentioned Facebook pages, have you found that worth creating the Facebook page versus the personal? And you have two, and it's just... Have you found that worth the investment?
I think it's great, actually. I get a little paranoid of I don't like email lists and stuff like that. So I'm really careful. I don't want to bombard fans or anything with messages. So I haven't really used it to its full potential. I'm waiting to make some announcements on my next projects. So that, you know, but I don't want to, you know, oh, I've got a new video out, you know, you've got to check it out. But they're already subscribed or something dumb like that. So I don't want to, you know. But no, I definitely love Facebook fan pages. I think they're great.
Do you guys have answers as well?
Well, I don't use a lot of social networking sites. I think mainly because I'm old. I don't know. Like, I have
old
a daughter.
School.
I have
old school.
No excuse then.
I have a daughter, and it's blogging, you know, because it's my full-time job now, it requires so much energy. But if I had to choose, I could not live without Flickr. No way I could live without Flickr.
True.
Mainly because writing used to be my hobby, and now that I do it to make money, photography is my hobby. And it's a great way to keep, I love seeing my friends' stuff.
I guess I'm so last year, because I would say like YouTube, just because that's where
GeoCities.
That's right. That's right. So I'm the coolest cat of 1998.
I actually use them in different ways. I mean, I use Twitter as sort of my default. Like, here's what I'm up to these days, and I only follow certain amounts of people. I use Pounce when I'm actually doing projects, when I'm doing tech stuff. For CNET, and because there's more of a techie audience in there. So, and you can, like Casey said, you can get into a little more detail. You can put up pictures and stuff like that. And then Facebook, I haven't been using as much lately.
Oh, actually, just to go back to the, sorry, do you mind
yeah, go ahead.
I jump in?
No, please.
The Facebook fan pages are wonderful for getting demographics. I found out that like 18 to 25 males make up 98% of my fans. So
I'm outside your demo.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Ian Kennedy, my blog. Going to your point about responding to feedback, definitely talking to them as humans really helpful. But also, when you're responding in comments, asking them to sort of focus themselves on actionable requirements is really, really helpful. Because they'll go on for a couple of paragraphs, but if you're shortened to a point, I understand what you're saying, but you know, what specifically are you interested in it? You have a comment on it. Is there something specific that is bugging you, or some sort of feedback that you can give us has been really, really helpful?
So you're saying that if somebody sends you like some really long rambling thing.
Yeah, we had an incident a couple of weeks ago where it was spinning out of control and the responses were getting longer and longer and longer. And we found out, actually we want to get their feedback, but we don't want to have these long comments going back and forth. So let's try to focus.
It sounds like you've made your own response just there.
Yeah. Sorry. It wasn't really a question. It was just
more of a comment.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Ariel Meadow-Stallings, and I'm a blogger at electrolicious.com and also author of a book called Offbeat Bride. And I have a question for you guys in dealing with the fans, which are great. You have these fans that love you and love your work. And I've had experiences recently with fans who, when they don't get as much acknowledgement as they want, then get really hostile and actually slip over into kind of a scary, stalker, creepy place. So obviously there's that line of not wanting to acknowledge people who are making you uncomfortable, but then when that lack of acknowledgement triggers them into some sort of psychotic tailspin, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
What did they want to be acknowledged for? Just response or?
Like I emailed you 10 times. Why didn't you email me back?
Yeah. Okay.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, they might have like mailed you clippings of their fingernails.
Ew.
You know?
True story.
Wow. Yeah.
I was afraid of that.
Well, I actually had one guy who lives near me. He sent me this crazy email saying I shouldn't have access to the internet and because I'm crazy. And I made fun of him and said that I was going to give him $10 to go see a therapist. And he sent me a $10 bill in the mail because I was the one that needed to see a therapist.
Clever.
But I saw his car on the street and I was tempted to go leave the $10 on his car.
What did
now
you
I'm
use
getting
it?
Crazy.
What did you use the $10 for? What did you use the $10 for?
So you're saying
for?
Start a war?
Hey, a money war.
The $10 is in my scrapbook.
So what do you think, though? I mean, we did touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, we kind of touched on that with my creepy 12-year-old dude. And I think I'm eventually going to have to say something to him, but, you know, nicely. And, you know, just say, I'm sorry, I'm too busy to, even if you just make up an excuse, as long as you're kind about it, then
or at least
they'll
neutral.
Probably understand.
Except, though, I mean, you want to come across as being, listen, I understand, and I know you're a human being, and I'm taking your feelings into consideration. There has to be a way where you can come across and say, where it cannot be misconstrued as being mean, as saying, this is becoming uncomfortable for me, so that they can't take your email and spread it around people saying, look at how awful this person treated me. We need to talk to Maggie. She's got some great words.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an art of diplomacy, basically, that you have to learn in dealing with people.
It's funny, actually. I worked in diplomacy before this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, you're a natural. Go ahead.
Hi, Wendy Pearsall from eMoms at Home. Heather, this actually is probably mostly directed to you, but I'd love for the other rest of the panel to chip in. I've seen the comment streams on your blog. Definitely, this is my fangirl moment to talk to you. the vicious attacks that you get scare the crap out of me. I mean, my blog has been kind of founded in a place where I keep it PG-13, and there's a lot of issues that I would like to talk about being a parent in business. And I won't go there because I see how you get attacked. And it's happened to me, too. I think part of the problem is that I look like Ann Coulter, and people think that because I look like Ann Coulter, they can talk to me like they would talk to Ann Coulter.
I'm sorry. That must be pretty rough.
We won't go there. But anyway, growing that thick skin, because, I mean, I get one comment, it rents headspace for 3 days, and, I don't want to go there. I don't want to censor myself that way, and you've really put yourself out there. How are you getting yourself through it mentally to be able to continue to be so transparent and keep putting out the great stuff that you're putting out?
My husband is just laughing right now. There have been many nights where, in the past 2 years, it's gotten a lot easier, and I don't even know what the switch was, but there were many nights, and, For a couple of years there where I would cry myself to sleep saying, I just want my life back because,
done that too, yeah.
Because it was terrible. But part of it is realizing is I have a group of friends and we email each other the crazy stuff. I keep it in a folder so that if I need to make a book of it one day that I can. But most of it is just the support system, ongoing therapy, talking about it, having a therapy fund to go talk about it. But the benefits of being open so far outweigh the bad part of it that I honestly have an email folder with about 7,000 hate mails, and I don't remember a single one, except for the one. Wait, there's one that I remember.
What about moderation? I mean, what do you take away comments? Do you moderate the comments? And how do you deal with that? You know, like what comments actually get to make
it? I usually leave most of them up unless it's attacking my readers.
That's
my rule.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I don't really have a system. It just seems, maybe it's just something in my mind. I try to leave them up unless they are so ridiculous that it's just like, you know, you can hate me, but I mean, give me a break. You know, at least be articulate. Like if you zing me or something, then I'll usually kind of laugh along with it. But if they're just pouring it on and pouring it on, it's at a certain point, it's like I don't have a responsibility to give somebody that is pounding on me some space to pound on me. You know, I would like to keep as many people in the conversation as possible. But, you know, at a certain point, it's like I don't have a responsibility to give you a platform. And, you know, the former journalist side in me wanted to just leave everything up and let the conversation go free and all that. But at a certain point, it's like, you know what? I don't need this, and I don't have to listen to it, so we'll see you later. So
thanks.
I moderate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't appreciate getting personal attacks, and so I delete them and I block them. Bye-bye.
Do you think that cuts down on the number of them?
Yeah, well, actually, when you're featured on YouTube, there's really no way to get rid of everybody. So pretty much every time one of our videos gets featured, it's like troll city. And then the good guys stay and they subscribe. And then, you know, when you get a regular episode, you know, you get wonderful comments. But yeah, there's that initial troll that you have to, you know, deal with.
Yeah, well, you know, that's interesting that you reminded me about a phenomenon that I've seen on YouTube, not so much on my own stuff. That if you get featured and one person writes something negative, the next 10 comments will be like, yeah, we agree with that. And
well,
then
the worst is when someone says, you're so hot, and then it's like dug down.
Yes.
Like, thanks.
I assume that's the worst. It has yet to happen to me yet, but no.
I mean, what do? You delete that?
Oh, no.
Not really.
And sometimes, and I've noticed, and I've kind of fallen into a bad habit here, that, you know, I've noticed this pattern enough. If one person is kind of the, I don't know what the term is for the piece of dust that a snowflake forms around, but if one person says something, then it kind of gives voice to all the other people out there in the audience to jump on. So if you can delete that first comment quickly enough, you can stop it. Or, you know, and I've done that. Like, it'll be a bad comment, 3 bad comments after it, I'll be pissed off, I'll be in a bad mood, I'll delete them, and then the next 15 comments, 20 comments are positive, and then, you know, I go to sleep, and then I wake up, and there's a bunch of negative comments. So
let's go ahead to our next question.
Hi, I work at Scholastic.com, the kids site, so just in general, you might want to check with your lawyers about contacting that 11-year-old, because they're are issues with that. I think there's a one-time chance you can contact that user just on a legal stand. Just a little flag for you. But in general, I was wondering how you guys feel about publicly responding to comments. You know, like you talked about personally giving feedback to specific users. You know, those are more like one-on-one basis. But, you know, if a bunch of kids or a bunch of people are asking you a specific thing, what positive or negative experiences you had with a public addressing something that may be boiling under everybody's skin?
Well, we've responded to comments. We've had like a comment-a-rama episode of A Comic Book Orange, and wow, it's so much fun. People actually respond to, if you want to have a comment show where you just comment back and forth, I bet you it'll do great. Because people love the interaction, and even if you're making fun of them, they're like, oh my god, you said my name. So it creates this weird bridge that even if you're negative back, sarcasm goes a long way. And it's very different from text sarcasm when you're on video format. It's a big difference.
On the Buzz Out Loud podcast, we do this a lot because we have a section of the podcast for voicemails and a section for emails. So people are used to hearing feedback. And a lot of times in those sections, we'll play a representative voicemail or read a representative email and respond to it and say, you know, we had a lot of other people raising the same issue and, you know, positive or negative or just a correction, whatever. We'll kind of use that forum to address it and, you know, have our response. So I don't know if that kind of gets to what you're talking about or...
I guess in my case, it doesn't really apply because these are kids and I think they're much more sensitive.
Yes.
I think in so that goes back to your, what you guys were talking about, like what you can say to somebody without hurting their feelings. And then, so I was wondering perhaps publicly addressing it. So it's not targeted specifically to that user, but he or she will be able to actually take away what you're thinking about that issue.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And maybe not, you just do the same thing that we're doing, except you don't have a representative email or you just say like, hey, we know some people might be thinking this or that. What do you guys think?
That's different. I mean, I would never publicly acknowledge that some crazy person has done something on my website because that would be their name in blinking lights and that's exactly what they want. And it would just be more encouragement. So I don't, well, at first I don't.
What if it was more of just a general criticism rather than, you know, like, I don't like your pictures or I don't.
I don't respond to the, I don't yes, respond
yeah,
to it.
Don't engage.
Mm-mm.
Hi. Sarah Roper from USA.gov. And I think my question may be geared towards you, Tom. I'm wondering, as a corporate blogger, how you build your relationship with an audience when you still have the overarching organizational policies putting down a lot of guidelines for you.
What kind of policies are you talking about? Like what kind of barriers?
What tone? How quickly do you respond? Can you afford to ignore rants or is that bad customer service? I mean, especially when you work for an organization that's pretty caught up in its image.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult if you're working with people who don't quite get what you're doing. I don't know if that's your case or not. What's nice about CNET is that they sort of let us do the thing. They trust us. They're like, and good audience relations is good customer service would probably be one argument I would use.
They trust you?
The CNET folks you. Trust me, yeah. At least that's what I'm telling this audience.
So you're the guy.
So then you don't have any policies coming down that say when you blog, be sure that it's friendly, or does it go through editorial control?
It's different with blogging and podcasting, actually. With blogging, there's definitely the same editorial guidelines that we have for reviews and news, but it's not, there is a guideline that says you want a tone that sounds personal, that is connected to the audience. And so that tone has been reached through a lot of conversations about what makes a good blog, what makes an audience like your blog and want to read it and come back to it. On the podcasting side, we've just really said, look, user-centric, that's what we want to be. And the corporation has gone along with that. Maybe they just don't know how we interact with the audience on some levels, but they've pretty much let us go and develop the scene because we've been doing it for a couple of years now. So I would say, you know, if you just need some ammo to say, look, this is a new area, this is a new kind of reader and a new kind of viewer, and you need to adapt to that. And it's not going to undermine the image that you're trying to project. It's going to bolster it. Whether they'll listen or not, I don't know.
I think so. Well, thanks.
Okay.
And just to clarify, too, there's a difference between people commenting about your physical appearance and people commenting with constructive criticism. So
that's very true, actually.
Yeah.
And we always accept constructive criticism.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
Yeah,
it goes without saying, I guess.
Hi. I know that on my blog, like I think most blogs, the hardcore commenters are a really tiny, tiny slice of the overall readership, but they have a disproportionate influence on the conversation, kind of the overall feel of the site. And I've tried a number of different things, both direct and indirect, to kind of, you know, influence that. But I still get emails from people who say, you know, I'm a longtime lurker. I'd really like to comment or what have you, but I feel like I can't. It's this click that I can't jump into without getting attacked, or not, you know, or just like, I just don't know how to do it. And mm-hmm. I've emailed them one-on-one, but are there other things that I can do to kind of reach out to those people who aren't commenting?
Yeah, it's hard if they're not commenting at all. I mean, if they did post once, I'd say you could respond and encourage them would be one thing.
Yeah.
But just kind of breaking the cliquish aspect, I know what you're talking about, where hardcore groups form around these things and then sort of elbow others out.
Yeah, I mean, I've found myself actually commenting on behalf or responding to the newbies when some of my more ardent fans, you know, get all cool and cooler than thou. And, you know, I usually, like everything, try to make a joke out of it and just, you know, invite them in and just say, no, everybody cool down. Can't we all agree together to hate Rob Schneider? And then, you know, why are we fighting amongst ourselves when, you know, there's so many other people out there we could fight with? So yeah, I would, you know, and usually what happens, at least with me when I do something like that, is the people that really love me, they still really love me, and they kind of understand it, especially if you're trying to be funny. And the people who you're defending feel like they can come in and play now, you know. So I guess, yeah, respond and then make sure that none of your hardcore fans get turned off. You know, don't do it in such a way that you turn them off. But, yeah, just make it apparent that your view and your hope for whatever comment system you have is that everybody gets to play. And sometimes you need to remind some of the more ardent users that that's the way that you want it. And they usually kind of, I don't want to say take those as marching orders, but sometimes they do.
Yeah, maybe I don't know if it works for your content, but you can also highlight users. They send you direct email. Maybe do it like, you know, fan of the month or things like that. Find other ways to highlight people so that they feel like they're being paid attention, and maybe that'll encourage them to get in on the conversation.
Actually, another thing, for A Comic Book Orange, we had this comment episode, and at the very end, we really told people, you know, comment, and then we put arrows in the video to the comment section. Like, we showed a screenshot of YouTube, and we showed, like, comments are here, you know, very obvious. And we got tons of comments after that. You know, some people just don't realize where things are, or, you know, you just have to remind them and promote that, so.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes.
You know, you can always write a blog post and say, comment on this, because they might be reading it in an RSS reader, and they might not click on it. They might just read it and go, okay, well, you know, they eat it and they poop it out.
Yeah, so. You know, we have a lot of smart readers and smart, and I'm sure you guys have a lot more smart readers and smart viewers than
we
do.
Ours have very high IQs.
Exactly. I love mine.
About Star Trek.
Exactly. And we did one of the confetti videos that we did. We put a little thing at the end, subscribe to us. That's it. You know, we'd been doing this for like a year and a half, and all we just put a little yellow button graphic at the end of our video, and that's all we did different. And our comments per view skyrocketed, and it was just like, sometimes they don't know. It's like they're very smart, but sometimes some of them aren't that savvy or whatever. And if you just,
or maybe
put
they don't think you
simple,
care.
Exactly.
You know,
that's entirely possible.
We only got a couple minutes, so let's try to get through these last two questions.
Hey, what's up? My question is about, we've been talking a lot about boundaries and transparency, and I was wondering, for you guys, when you have your public persona and your private self, how do you separate the things that you talk about? Do you have like subjects that are sacred, or do you do it by platform, like email is for friends, Facebook is for fans? How do you divide those things?
I kind of do it by feel. I mean, I only follow people on Twitter that I'm actually interested in following as a fan of them. But then on Pounce, I follow everybody who wants me to. So, I mean, I use the two things different ways.
I definitely have a list of things in my head that I won't write about. And those are contracts that I've made with myself and with my family and whatnot. So what I'll do is I'll joke about writing about them, just sort of a little, because I want to write about them. And so I'll joke about writing about them at home with my husband so I can just let out the steam so that I don't have to write about it publicly. And then I have a private email address that I have given to my close friends and can vent about things there, not publicly.
Best not to talk about relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your relationships are personal.
Yeah. All right. Last question.
Hi, it's Sarah Goldstein from The Gargan Queen. Excuse my voice, I have a cold. I have a question for Heather. You mentioned that you have sort of a support network. My question is, I'm from Australia, and in Australia we have exactly two full-time professional fashion blogs, bloggers, myself and Gala Darling. Now, we have a sort of support network. We're an hour and a half's flight apart, so we fly back and forth to see each other from time to time because there's literally nobody else that either of us knows who understands the exact challenges in our work. So I was wondering, how did you find your support network? What sort of people did you look for?
I didn't actually actively look for them. It's just a bunch of women who kind of started blogging about their children at the same time that I did. And none of us live even remotely near each other. You know, one's in Michigan, one's in New York, one's in California, I'm in Salt Lake City, and it's all based through email. And really all it is one of us will get a bad comment or one of us have a bad day, and we CC each other, and it's like, dude, this fucking sucks. And we're all like, yes, it does. You know, and then they'll give us the comment, and we're like, well, this person sucks because this, and this is not true, and this is not true. And none of us, we see each other maybe once a year, and it's all based through email, and it works because we all do the same thing and get the same type of criticism all the time.
So they're all basically other parents who are bloggers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, I get that. I get the same thing in the online video world as well. When I talk to other girls in online video, we all talk about, they keep talking about my boobs, bastards, you know? We all have similar experiences, well, within our communities.
My suggestion would be to reach out to some other fashion bloggers, or they don't have to be in Australia, just someone that you can like send a quick email to saying, you know what, I'm feeling really vulnerable right now, and if you could say the right thing to me, that would be awesome.
All right, well, thanks everybody for coming. Chris Smith, Zanzibar 19, Heather Armstrong, Deuce, Casey McKinnon, Galacticast. I'm Tom Merritt. Thanks.